So let's thank the organizers for inviting me, and this is something completely different in some sense. So the last years we made some careful investigation of several low-dimensional spin systems, and I want to show you some of these results concerning especially aspects that are to be investigated by light scattering. And the main aspects are these bound states, singular bound states, that are very well to be investigated with these methods. So we will look on different compounds representing chains or ladders, and I will show how the development of the spin gap leads in light scattering to the development of well-defined bound states, and we will see how dimerization, topology, frustration or defects influences these states. So the compounds I want to take a look on, this is but some of them are already mentioned: copper germanate, sodium vanadate, this quarter-filled spin ladder, but also the recently found two-dimensionally strongly frustrated dimer system we took a look on, and this somewhat more complicated telephone number compound with both chains and ladders and superconductivity under pressure. And this is the only system which can be doped of these compounds. So in my acknowledgement, I would especially like to highlight the contributions of our PhD students here in the upper row, but also sample preparation was very important, so we had samples from different groups from Dresden to from Paris to Tokyo and so on. And especially theory is important for light scattering. If you look on magnetic excitations, and we had very good collaboration with people from Cologne, from the group of Müller-Hartmann, but also Claudius Groß, Wolfram Brenisch, Arno Kampf, who was also in the audience, made important contributions. If we, just as a warm-up, look on these exchange topologies, I would like to make some rough statements from an experimentalist concerning interesting aspects of these compounds, especially concerning light scattering. So you see, starting from A to C, the more complicated structures, the linear chain. So this has usually very large exchange coupling constants, but as you will see later, they are not so interesting for magnetic light scattering, as these systems are very pure, so you don't expect much to see. If you come then to this kind of exchange coupling via some angle, these systems are more interesting, because now the exchange coupling, as Daniel Komsky already noted, tensively depends on this angle. So there's also some spin-phonon coupling, and in copper germanate you have this spin-pi-hertz transition. But also these types of chains exist in this strontium-calcium copper oxide, and in this case they are doped, but here the charge localizes as sunrise singlets. So the next complication would be to add two chains, and this is done here via three exchange coupling constants. And these systems are interesting, especially here, the family I noted here down. There are a large bunch of compounds represented here by the stadium cuprate. Usually these compounds show very nice or interesting magnetic phase diagrams with plateaus in the magnetization. Now if we want to couple these chains or ladders in a two-dimensional way, we have this scheme that was already pointed out by some speakers of these ladders, and then the shift of the vanadium side or copper side, the half a unit cell, and then you get some kind of insulation here, and in this way, out of this usually two-dimensional crystal structure, nature provides this more or less like a one-dimensional exchange path. If we go to two dimensions and just neglect the square lattice of the high TC, there are two interesting compounds that were already mentioned. This is calcium vanadate 09. This is a little bit difficult in sample preparations, and only recently single crystals exist of appreciable quality. But maybe more interesting, this is strontium borate, as the ground state is here composed of an arrangement of a product of exact singlets. So you have these copper sides, the dimers, and it's strongly frustrated via this J prime here. So I want to organize my talk here into these topics. So first we will speak about how light couples to the spin system. And usually in these systems, in the cuprate, spin orbit coupling is quite weak. So we have to take the exchange coupling approximation to get some magnetic light scattering. And then we will talk about the spin gap transition from the continuum into these well-defined bound states. So just a short reminder. And this makes light scattering different from neutron scattering. So here I sketch the exchange process. Light comes in, there's a virtual state at very high energy. The spin exchange process of the spins into this virtual state exchange process back, and you generate two triplets and the light comes out. And at this Hamiltonian or process of spin conserving, you look on singlet excitations, delta S equal to zero. And just in the simplest case for a one-dimensional model, I wrote down these two Hamiltonians of the Raman exchange process, which is now identical to the Heisenberg Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian of a Heisenberg system with some frustration. And as you can see immediately, without frustration, there wouldn't be any exchange signal because both Hamiltonians commute. So in one dimensions, it's very important that you include some additional term, and here for example frustration, but you can also dimerize the system, and as soon as there is some dimerization, some additional light scattering will come up. But this is only true for a one-dimensional system. So the best way to study this transition from the pure chain to a dimerized chain is a spin-piled system as a function of temperature. You can change the dimerization. So one system that I already mentioned is the scaffold germinate. And here you have a sketch of this two-dimensional folded crystal structure. So essentially the crystal structure of all these compounds is two-dimensional, and then you have this additional complicated exchange path and get a one-dimensional magnetic exchange. So here you have the chain, a sketch of this chain, different angles, and this additional frustration path via two oxygen. And in susceptibility, it is clear that you have some kind of transition. The low dimensional magnetism here is shown up as a maximum in susceptibility. And as this susceptibility is only poorly described by Bonner and Fischer, it was quite early clear that frustration has to play some role in this compound. And now we will come to Raman scattering results. So here I'm showing low temperature data, that means below the spin-piles transition of 14 Kelvin. So we start at 11 Kelvin, essentially a featureless curve. This is a phonon at low energy here at 170 wave number. And as soon as the temperature decreases even more, we get some additional scattering. First it's a little bit broad and at lower energy, then it stiffens and gets higher to higher energy and gets a well-defined mode with a gap-like asymmetric feature. And please remind me here this small BIMF, this I will discuss later. And if we now look on the energy scales, from neutron scattering it's well known the first triplet gap, so the triplet branch is at 2 MeV, this would be 16 wave number. And if you look at our mode, we see this mode at 30 wave number. So it's not double the gap, not 2 delta, as it would be in a simple 2 magnon picture. It's reduced by a binding energy. And this is just the binding energy, in this case, mostly given by frustration. So we have this energy. And now during my talk, I will give these binding energies usually with respect to the triplet, so it's at 1.8, the triplet energy. As I showed you, this mode softens and broadens if you come towards a smaller dimerization. If you apply a magnetic field, there's no splitting, so you can prove this is a singlet state. One important argument that distinguishes this state from additional phonons that also come up due to dimerization is the temperature dependence of the intensity. So this is intensity as function of temperature. And I have here several contributions. In blue here is a continuum of scattering that I don't show here. So this is in the homogeneous case, a very broad continuum of scattering due to frustration. This intensity falls down due to the binding effect of the dimerization. And instead, as the lattice dimerizes, we see additional phonons coming up at the transition and the bound state. And as you can see, the intensity dependence of the intensity as function of temperature of the bound state is distinctively different from the phonons. So the phonons are proportional to the dimerization delta square, while the bound state energy or intensity in this case is more complicated because you have to take into account the temperature dependence of the binding energy, which is not so easy actually to calculate. So if I actually there were some contributions already from Miller, Pointblanc, and Kotov about theories corresponding to bound states. So this is just a simple sketch of our ideas. Two spinons are confined to a triplet branch. This is what you see in neutron scattering. And then due to an additional interaction, you can again confine these our two triplets into bound states. And it's possible to see triplet and singlet bound states. And this is a scheme from a paper of Pointblanc, where this approximately linear potential is shown, and at an energy of 2 delta, a continuum starts of free, quasi-free particles. And below this energy, these bound states should arise. For example, there are calculations from Bousserat, but also other work from Ulrich and Ogier and other authors. So this is for a frustrated chain. So this is a purely one-dimensional model where you take into account frustration. And here you can see this first triplet branch. And just between the triplet and the continuum, that means 2 delta, is the singlet branch that we investigate by light scattering. So this would be the binding effect of frustration. But as it was highlighted by Affleck and other authors, there's also a binding effect due to interchain interaction. That means some coupling, maybe of exchange or magnetoelastic interaction, that leads to a fixed orientation and arrangement of the dimers on this lattice. And if you break one of these dimers and try to tear them apart, you increase the energy of the region between these two defects. So that means that these particles are bound in some sense. In a first approximation, this should also lead to a quasi-linear binding potential. And here below, I showed some analog to this idea, I mean, this textbook. And this was pointed out by Locklin recently. This is, I find, quite fascinating. I mentioned that these excitations are singlets. And usually you prove this if you apply a magnetic field. So here we see on a blown-up scale a measurement at 0 tesla at the black curve. So you can see this excitation at 30 wave number. And then we apply 4 tesla. And as you see, essentially nothing changes. And if you change the polarization, so these two measurements were done with polarization in the chain. So polarization picks the exchain path. If you change polarization here to a crossed one, you see there's no signal. So these excitations are really running along this chain direction. So the next topic I would like to discuss is the effect of defects on these states. And also in this case, Kappa germinate is some kind of model system, because you can, for example, substitute non-magnetic zinc on the Kappa side. And what you then see is, as it was already discussed, that the spin pile transition is depressed strongly, and you get antiferromagnetism at lower temperature. But there's also a region where the spin pious phase and antiferromagnetism coexists. So you can look on this picture in many different views, but the most simplest one would be that you cut the chains like written here, if you cut them, inter-chain interaction gets more important, and so three-dimensional order wins. But if you want to discuss it a little bit finer, what happens is that this triplet branch has to cross over into a gapless spectrum. And this means that you have to introduce new states into the gap. And these are spin-on states, as with every defect, you break up a dimer. And again, the same arguments hold as for the singlet states I showed you on the pure compounds. These spin-ons should also bind to new modes. And here I show you a measurement. So this is a pure sample of copper germinate. Then we substitute just 0.2% of zinc. As you see, the signal drastically drops in intensity, but instead there's a new excitation at approximately half the energy. So this energy is very close actually to the triplet branch, but it's no triplet, it's a singlet excitation due to this substitution. Now at 0.66, you see both excitations have approximately the same energy, the same intensity, and then you can put in more substitution and completely depress this defect here. And actually this binding can be discussed as I did it before. So you introduce this defect, you generate a spin-on. If you want to tear the spin-on away from the defect, you have to put an additional energy into the system, so the spin-on is somehow bound to this defect. Let's come to the next compound. That means we want to study somehow getting from the chain into the ladder. And that was the reason that we started with the sodium vanadate, but unfortunately this compound is a quarter-filled ladder. So it's more or less in the dimerized phase, so for temperatures below 34 Kelvin, the spins are oriented somehow in a zigzag chain. So it's not the ladder that we propose to study. But anyway, going from the chain to this type of structure, we expanded the topology in somehow, and there are also chances of charge degrees of freedom, although these, as I understand now, are at higher energy. Anyway, we have this charge ordering, and we have the zigzag chain, and as you see here, this measurement, a lot of new peaks appear. And if we discuss the spectrum, this again, intensity is a function of Raman shift. There's some kind of background. We heard a lot about backgrounds today. This, if you go to lower temperature, there's a decrease. So this is a typical gap-like spectrum, and you could fix the spin gap as 2 delta at this point. Then you have additional excitations below the gap or just at the border at 67, 107 and 134. And additional modes, as I said, every dimerization leads to additional modes in the phonon spectrum, but these here are marked with green. And if we come back to the energy with respect to the triplet gap, we can see we have one mode at an energy very close to copper germinate. This was 1.8, but there's also a mode which is strongly bound. Because in contrast to the simple chain, we have here a very large binding effect. And there's another mode which you could call a resonance mode, because its energy is somehow above 2 delta. So the same arguments hold as for copper germinate. I didn't show these results here due to time reasons. These modes also soften and broaden if you come closer to the transition, if the dimerization gets weaker. And also in a magnetic field, there's no splitting. But I want to show you the temperature dependence again of these peaks, as this information looks to be quite important. So we have a large number of modes here, and these modes should be phonons. The energies are very high, 200 to 1000 wave number, but we have these low energy modes. So you can see that the intensity of the phonons just rises sharply at the transition, while these bound states, or candidates of bound states, just rise linearly. So they depend very sensitive on any defect or fluctuation, and therefore their intensity grows lower. And also in the lower picture you can see that only these new magnetic modes broaden at the transition. So this is a half width of these modes and you can see how they get brought. In contrast to the phonons, these phonons are just switched on. They exist before, but at a different K point, and now they are folded to the zone center, equal to zero. This is the point where we measure, and therefore the phonon shape doesn't change. It's just the intensity that changes with temperature. And similar to kappa germinate, I mean not similar, but this is one chance to somehow change the system. Here you can do sodium deficiency studies. That means that some of the spins are taken out of the system. We have the right curve, the bottom curve, the pure compound. You see these three modes and one phonon in between. Now we take out 1% of the sodium, and you already see that the frequency has shifted. It's getting a little bit broader, 2%, 3%, everything is gone, but the phonon remains. So let's now get to the third compound, and this was already discussed in some sense. So this is this two-dimensional Shastri Sutherland lattice, where you have kappas here, which are coupled due to oxygen, bor, triple molecules, and actually these larger exchange coupling paths are perpendicular to each other. So if you look here, this is a sketch, you can see there's a strong frustration within this plaquette of four kappa units. And this compound has a spin gap. This is shown, for example, in susceptibility measurements. Here's a strong drop of the susceptibility. And the reason why it's called Shastri-Sutherland is that if you neglect this coupling J and just take this J prime, you can transform this arrangement of dimers onto a square lattice. And this also means that you get from this exact dimer state, from this dimer state that is depicted here, you should get close to nail order. So there should be some quantum critical point, and actually there are calculations about the value of the coupling constants, and it was shown by an analysis of thermodynamic data that this compound is quite close to this quantum critical point. Another interesting feature is the magnetic phase diagram. So magnetization is a function of magnetic field. So you see distinct plateaus with a filling factor of 1/8 and 1/4. So let's get to the Raman data. And here I show you data at higher temperature, 50 Kelvin, a quite broad line, some kind of fluctuations or incoherent scattering. If you decrease, a broad bump somehow survives, and then at lowest temperature, and we have to get very low in temperature with respect to the gap is 34 Kelvin, then suddenly these new states appear here. And as you can see, the situation is more complicated as in the chain compounds. Now we are scattering in parallel scattering configurations, but also scattering in cross polarizations. And these cross polarizations are usually magnetic signals. For example, in a square lattice of the high temperature superconductors, two magnon scattering is usually observed only in these crossed ones. If we now compare these peaks and their energies with the gaps that were observed, actually there are two branches that were observed, both in neutron scattering and ESR, so this at 24 and 40 wave number. We see that in the cross polarization, we just get the triplet signals that were observed with other measurements. So 24 and 40, intensity is quite low, but large enough. But we also get additional signals, and there's one just in between. This would be a good candidate for a bound state. But there are also modes to higher energy. This one is a phonon. So if we want to get more information, we have to do a careful symmetry analysis, which I tried here. So these polarizations are available in this plane. So we have the two cross polarizations, both give pure triplet symmetry, and there are two even polarizations, and these are mixed, A1 and B1. These are usually the fully symmetric components. As I said before, there are two triplets here marked in blue that are also observed in ESR and neutron, but here we have an additional mode which comes up with the same polarization, which we identified as a triplet polarization. So this is a little bit puzzling. But if we look on the other polarizations, we see here the red mode comes up in all channels with A1, but also in B1, so it's somehow mixed. But the main intensity is in this A1 channel. So this would be the candidate for a singlet bound state. And there are other modes here which are completely mixed somehow, which don't have very well realized selection rules. Here's this phonon, and maybe you can see that the higher the energy of the modes get, the broader they get, the less well defined are these binding effects. And coming back to this very small splitting between this mode in blue and that one in red, there's also evidence in ESR measurements that in this compound there may be some effect of anisotropy, some additional anisotropy of the copper ion. This is not totally cleared up, but this is ESR as function of magnetic field. And as you can see, so this is the first triplet mode. And this would be the second. But if you go to field equal to zero, there remains some finite splitting. So this would be some evidence for an additional anisotropy, and maybe the reason that our peaks are slightly splitted and change with symmetry. So this is now the most complicated compound that we investigated. Actually complicated by crystal structure, very large unit cell. Also complicated as the axis parameter of the chains and the ladders not totally matched, so it's some nearly incommensurate addition of two subcells, which makes the phonon spectrum very complicated, so we have to be very careful here with Raman scattering. And in this compound, you can see two gaps with different methods. There's a gap in the chain and a gap in the ladder. There's approximately a factor of two between these two, and actually the gap in the ladder is clear due to topology, it should exist, but the gap in the chain should be explained, and these are the carriers that are on this chain, because it's self-doped. Also, if you put in calcium, the doping doesn't change. So these are carriers that are charge ordered as sunrise singlets on this chain, and therefore you get this gap here. And what you do if you substitute this compound is that the lattice constants shrink, so you generate some chemical pressure, and then charge is transferred from the chain to the ladder system, and then you have to apply real pressure, and then the compound gets superconducting. And in resistivity measurements, for example, you can see that the holes are really delocalized, but there's also some hint that the anisotropy of the compound is decreasing, and even by NMR there was some argumentation that the compound more gets into a two-dimensional regime. So that means that, yeah, this term is a little bit funny, that means that the spin gap that is observed in this system is somehow filled up. And this was the reason we wanted to look on this compound, because as you saw, spin gaps and these excitations can be studied. But even here from the spectrum, you see we are a little bit lost. I mean, all these excitations are phonons here and there. And this is just one polarization, so I could show you even more phonons. This is a big phonon. So we can only somehow judge from the temperature dependence whether some excitation might be magnetic or not. And if we now cool the sample down, so I tried here to attach here some kind of background, you can see that at some frequency spectral weight is missing. That means some excitations are lost here, and these excitations have energies below approximately 200 wave number. In addition, we can see here, for example, here's a shoulder at approximately 500 wave number. If we cool down here, a kind of new state or a sharpening of the shoulder arises. And if we compare these two energies with the measurements that were done before, that you can see these features have an energy of 2 delta, and they very well fit to the data that was known by neutron or magnetic susceptibility measurements. Then the next step would be to change calcium substitution and to see what happens to the system. As we know, lattice constants are changing, there's a charge transfer. So the first effect would be to look on the chain gap due to this charge ordering. As you can see here, this depletion of spectral weight is diminished. The energy is somehow shifting to lower frequency, and at 12, x equal to 12, there's no more depletion of spectral weight. So this means the spin gap in the chain is closed. If we look in contrast to the feature at about 500 wave number, you can see this was this sharp step-like edge, and you see somehow the spectrum does not change so much. So how we interpret this data is that the gap in the chain system is closed, but the gap in the lattice system still remains, although it's a little bit washed out. So we can now compare this analysis with other measurements. What I show here are the black dots, neutron scattering, only for 2, calcium concentration, pure sample, strongly substituted sample, and some NMR results. And as I told you, the NMR was somehow pointing towards a closing of the spin gap of the lattice system. So you can see, I have to look. So this is oxygen NMR. And this is kappa NMR from 2 different groups, so there's some hint that this gap closes. But as you see, as neutron shows and also Raman scattering, actually the gap doesn't close at all. So in the substituted compound, where the charge is transferred to the ladder, the spin gap is not diminished. It's washed out, and somehow the NMR measures something of these additional, maybe slowly fluctuating states, but the gap itself as a coherent triplet branch still exists. So I'm coming to my conclusion. I showed you a lot of data going from spin chains to zigzag chains to ladders, quarter filled ladders, till we came to this doped compound. And the main message is, with Raman scattering, you can really investigate the singlet bound states as they were predicted by theory. And I showed you how frustration and topology increases or changes the properties of these bound states. I showed you how defects decrease the intensity of the singlet bound state, the pure bound state, but instead new bound states appear. And this was also proposed by Pontbon in his calculations. So these are these defect-induced bound states. And in the last part of my talk, I discussed how doping changed the spin gap in this strontium-O41 compound. So there's, in our believing, no change of the spin gap. The spin gap is conserved with doping. Thank you.
Now, if you look at your Raman scattering data, which is just a
for example, this one. Yes, you have. I mean, you can argue about it, but let's take a look at this point here. There's still this shoulder crossover, but this intensity still coincides with this intensity. So there's no filling up, actually, at this energy. At least at this energy, we can show it. But, I have to agree that the shoulder also broadens, but also these samples have some problems with their crystal structure. That means, with changing calcium, also this ratio of these two lattice constants changes. So in between these compositions, there are fixed stoichiometries, so you would also expect some broadenings of these lines.
So when you're finding bowling, that's not necessarily why changing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. This would be my opinion. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Can you comment about lifetime of this bound state?
No. So this is a DC method. And actually I heard there were some attempts to short pulse laser spectroscopy to get to these states. But actually without spin orbit coupling or without carriers, it's very difficult to couple directly to the spin. So this is a Raman effect. And this you wouldn't do it at a short time scale. So you would need a channel with a direct coupling to the spin system. And this you don't have here.
Peak width does not tell you about that.
Pardon?
Peak width?
I would say here it's mainly determined by the quality of the sample. Because we have very nice samples with a very sharp excitation. Maybe you saw these data in between. Because they are really sensitive to the sample quality. As I showed you, there was a small blimp in the pure sample, and even there you can see a very small intensity of this defect-induced signal. I mean, I could think about an analysis, but yeah, this would be my experimental feeling.
Okay, can you see to place the Raman, or they have to be taken? You argue that some of your modes are accurate.
Yeah, I mean, this is. In that sense, the strontium borate is not such a good example. So this compound is the first time that we actually see triplets in our spectrum. And this also means that something with the kappa side or kappa isotropic exchange must be wrong. It cannot be that it's a purely isotropic Heisenberg exchange, in my opinion. Then we wouldn't see triplets. But pardon? Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, these are quite recent results, and what we now do is a study of resonance effects. So it's possible that there's some kind of resonance here. That means that the virtual state that we excite is not really a virtual state, and then the selection rules are not so strict anymore. But this we have to figure out. This takes some time. But, yesterday I discussed with Kotov, and he said you should look with a more broader view on this and neglect all the smaller details. That means essentially one singlet peak here, this you would like to see. And these are very small splittings, and these splittings are very well comparable to the ESR splittings. Just one wave number, comparison with 30 wave number of the signal.
What was the energy of your incident?
Two EV. Yeah, so this is green light. And in the blue light, there seems to be some resonance. But unfortunately, email broke down. So I don't have the recent results.
Okay,
fine.
Is there any independent in the
Yeah, this is an interesting point. So, actually, the vanadium compound, as I see this thing, is somehow much more complicated than the than the case of a single chain like kappa germinate. And so for sodium vanadate, actually one of the three peaks has a pure symmetry. So this is, I have to remember which one is the chain axis. This one is direction in ladder, the in ladder direction. And this peak here, which is just at the energy which is compatible with the bound state in kappa germinate, so about 1.8 of the triplet gap, is only observed in chain direction. But as you can see, these two other modes are somehow mixed. So this again shows that, here the situation is more complicated. And in the paper that we prepared, we speculated about the chance that these dimers may have some different orientation and some resonating kind of way, and therefore provide this breaking of selection rules. But this model has never been refined, so I don't know. This case is not so easy. And even the low temperature structure is not so well known, so maybe we will clear up this in the future.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. So the food guys knew that we were late today.
Oops.
And so we thank the speakers again. Yeah, thank you.